This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Welcome to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report. Stephen J. Lowenstein with you for the next hour as we look through the pages of this week's Cincinnati Business Courier. We've got a lot to cover today. We'll be focusing mostly on downtown Cincinnati and some articles regarding how it's growing and how it will continue to develop, one emphasizing a little bit more of the office market, and the other article dealing a little bit more with other types of businesses and activities going on downtown. We'll start with the cover story entitled Room to Grow. Developers, Fortune 500 firms, and nonprofits alike look to the Central Business District to continue as the healthy heart of the region. And then right along those lines, our next article, The New Downtown, it's entitled, As Cities Across the Nation Grapple with Empty Office Buildings, well, Cincinnati shows refilling them can be done, but it's not easy. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Bengals and Hamilton County. The article, Why Hamilton County Rejected the Cincinnati Bengals' $350 million Lease Extension Proposal. Next, some good news for you Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra fans. The symphony has finally, after a long search, named its 14th music director. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Kroger situation and their attempted merger or purchase of Albertsons. Now, most of the articles that we've had on this program dealt with why it's a good idea for the merger to go ahead. Well, this article is going to talk about how it may benefit shareholders if the Albertson deal is canceled. We'll then go up the hill to the University of Cincinnati and Jim Grau, who gives $5 million for the Linder College of Business and UC Athletics. And we'll continue talking about the university as they've approved a $36 billion spend for massive student housing development. And we'll close out today's program talking about the Blink Festival's expansion into Northern Kentucky for 2024 edition, moving to a new city. Well, let's begin with a cover story for the print edition of the Courier this week. It's entitled Room to Grow. Developers, Fortune 500 firms, and nonprofits alike look to the Central Business District to continue as the healthy heart of the region. Downtown Cincinnati's comeback from the COVID-19 pandemic is pronounced but incomplete, with tantalizing residential developments underway or in the pipeline, but few answers about whether a jolted office market has finally bottomed out. I do believe downtown Cincinnati is different from other cities, said Bimal Patel, founder of hotel owner Rolling Hills Hospitality. It's a vibrant market, not only for the hotel industry, but for multifamily, restaurants, and bars. We still have a long way to go, but I feel like it's at a healthy place. At the Business Courier's annual Commercial Real Estate Developers Power Breakfast, held April the 23rd at Hard Rock Casino, Cincinnati, Patel was joined by fellow panelist Bobby Malley, CEO of the Model Group, Tim Massa, Chief People Officer at Kroger Company, and Christy Samad, Executive Vice President of Civic and Commercial Space Activation at Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation, or 3CDC. Downtown Cincinnati saw a 28% more activity in February of 2024 from 1 year prior. That's an increase that ranked fifth among U.S. cities, according to cell phone data from unique visitors compiled by the Downtown Recovery Project from the University of Toledo. Cincinnati's Fortune 500 companies and law firms are spearheading the current phase of the recovery. Procter & Gamble, Kroger, Fifth Third Bank, and Western Southern have launched in-office returns, while firms like Keating, Muthing & Kleekamp and Taft, Stettinius & Hollister barely left in 2020. Thousands of workers are back on downtown streets, helping to revive business travel, bolstering hotel occupancy, and supporting the meeting industry. "We need to get back," Massa said. Kroger is returning its downtown workers to 4 days per week. "Our culture and our values are based on collaboration, on coming together. We were missing that. We need to get people back." 3CDC is seeing increased foot traffic at the downtown spaces it activates with events, Fountain Square and Court Plaza. "The vibrancy is there. The traffic is there," Sabat said. "We're seeing people who want to come to the spaces and want to come downtown." Maui noted Cincinnati's pipeline of more than 22 residential conversion projects has roots in pro-growth policies that resulted in a 20.3% population increase from 2010 to 2020. He's bullish on the trajectory of downtown given its arts, architecture, sports, events, and food scene, as well as the community of strangers only a dense urban core can form. "People just want to be around people," he said. "It's fun to be in places where people are." But the transition is incomplete. The same University of Toronto project found downtown Cincinnati registered just 64% of its pre-pandemic traffic during a week last October, 57th in the country. The recovery isn't uniform either. Weekend traffic and after-hours traffic are rebounding far better than weekdays and work hours. Downtown's overall office vacancy rate, which reached a historic high with the rest of the region in the fourth quarter last year, took up again to start 2024, even as it lost nearly 300,000 square feet of inventory to future conversions. Office leasing is buoyed by a Class A space. New or renewed Class A leases downtown comprised half of the total leasing activity in the region in the first quarter of 2024. At the same time, a stark divide is forming. Five major downtown office towers ticked below 50% occupancy last year, and the lower tiers of the affordability spectrum continue to hollow out. Downtown has lost nearly 1.7 million square feet of Class B inventory since 2021 to planned conversions. The same trend will likely see downtown office inventory fall to a quarter of the region's total office inventory by the end of 2024, around 14% lower than its share to start the pandemic. It's too early to say whether downtown's spike in vacancies has plateaued, though commercial real estate sources maintain the bleeding has stopped in the first quarter. Workforce. For Kroger, office key to collaboration productivity. Kroger in February began a process to transition employees at its downtown offices. The tower at Court and Vine Streets, as well as its analytics workers at 84.51 on 5th and Ray Streets back into the office 4 days per week. There was no playbook, no guide to help us get through what everyone went through during the pandemic, Massa said. We were hoping it would be a 2-week thing, and yet here we are. Motivating the company's 2024 return was its reliance on vast, cross-functional teams working on complex marketing strategies, staffing plans, real estate acquisitions, and other projects. Hundreds more have been dedicated to the possible merger with Albertsons Company Incorporated. The same teams solved problems in new and creative ways during the pandemic. But there was always a limit, Massa explained, to what could be accomplished remotely. The more we're in a room together, putting up ideas, brainstorming, we found it was much better done in person, he said. We're even more productive now than we were before. Kroger refreshed parts of its aging office tower to welcome employees back. The first floor, which once held a bank, a restaurant, and a snack area, is now a massive town hall space. Another floor has been outfitted with technology so employees can drop in casually and get work done. We made it a cooler place to work, Massa said. By and large, people are excited to be back and connected. The Court Street they returned to is not the same one they left. 3CDC remade the street into a pedestrian-friendly plaza with outdoor seating, new restaurants, and thriving foot traffic. To see the entrepreneurs, the small businesses coming to life, to see our folks eating out, using the facility, getting to Washington Park, more and more people are walking around the city, having one-on-ones. I think it's great, Massa said. We see a big benefit and a draw to what's happening in the city and wanting to come back. Leisure. 3CDC aims to refill civic spaces in the heart of the city. Now, nowhere is downtown Cincinnati's post-pandemic revival more evident than in the increasing bustle of its two main civic spaces, Mountain Square and Court Street Plaza, each managed and programmed with events by 3CDC. We're totally on the upswing, said Christy Samad, executive vice president with 3CDC. As people are coming back to work in the offices, we're seeing the uptick. We're seeing more lunchtime events come back, which is a sign businesses are back downtown. But we're also seeing the evenings continue to sustain and increase traffic, which is awesome. 3CDC never took its foot off the gas at Fountain Square during the pandemic, returning with socially distanced mainstays like Salsa on the Square Tuesdays in the summer of 2020. Still, the numbers speak for themselves. Fountain Square saw just 1.5 million visitors that year. That's according to data from 3CDC. That number grew to 4 million in 2023, and it's slated to increase thanks in part to new events 3CDC is introducing this year, like Blues and Brews Wednesday. At Court Street Plaza, 4 new restaurants are now opening for business, and 3CDC is currently working with them to figure out how to best align its events and programming. With Kroger coming back into the office, we've seen a huge influx of traffic on Court Street specifically, Samad said. During the Business Courier's Power Breakfast, Kroger Chief People Officer Tim Massa said, "The Court Street Plaza is full of activity now that his company has employees coming to the office more often." All of the panelists praised 3CDC's efforts, mentioning the city would not be in the position it is in today without the nonprofit organizations focusing on cultivating a vibrant and active downtown and over the Rhine every day. Greasy DC combined its commercial leasing teams and its civic space team in January to focus on events driving traffic to commercial tenants. Sabad and the combined teams are looking at how they can adjust the timing and types of events as downtown welcomes a true live, work, play mix of office workers, visitors, and permanent residents. The more that is happening downtown, the more reason people will make it a destination, she said. Housing. More room for residents. A lot more. In a matter of months, residents will begin to move into the Mercantile Building and Mercantile Center at 4th and Walnut Street downtown, an $84 million Model Group redevelopment. 3CDC and the city could be underway with streetscape improvements. The skywalk will be gone. Cincinnati City Council will likely consider its demolition in May. The entire block will be transformed. It's going to be night and day, said Model Group CEO Bob Malley. We're going to go from predominantly vacant blight to high-performing, completely full buildings that are going to add a ton of vibrancy to the block. Model Group was ahead of the curve on the urban redevelopment and residential conversion train. Now, many others have climbed aboard. As many as 22 are in the works downtown. Around the same time the Mercantile Apartments open, City Club Apartments will open Union Central in the iconic Central Trust Tower, two blocks to the east. I'm thrilled, he said. Our buildings are not a great place to live if that building, Central Trust, is empty. You're adding hundreds of people onto the street. It's unlikely every one of the planned conversions will happen. Many depend on financing from banks, still hesitant to lend. Construction costs remain high, and conversions often require that developers burn cash while existing leases run to term. Building enough parking is difficult and adds a premium to rents. Now we summarize the office residential seesaws as opportunity in crisis. But demand won't be an issue. Malley believes downtown Cincinnati, currently home to around 6,100 people, can support 20,000 more residential units over the next decade, given continued rent growth and high occupancy rates. Since 2000, downtown's residential population has nearly doubled, growing to 93%. Many downtown apartment buildings tout occupancy rates above 90%. Now, people want to live on great blocks and in great neighborhoods. More is more, he said. Cincinnati was already underbuilt compared to other cities of our size and stature. Maybe there's a limit to what it can sustain. I just don't believe we're anywhere close to it. Hospitality. Hotels bounce back in downtown Cincinnati. Now, downtown hotels could be back to near pre-pandemic occupancy rates in early 2025, when Moxy Downtown Cincinnati is expected to open. Amal Patel, whose Rolling Hills Hospitality manages 15 hotels with more than 1,235 rooms in the region, embarked on Moxy, a stylish and playful Marriott brand, at the end of 2018, when he bought the property on Main Street downtown. Patel said the ground floor of Cincinnati's Moxy, the region's first, will serve as a coffee shop in the morning, a collective workspace during the work day, and a bar in the evening hours. The mixed offerings typify changing use patterns as hotels in urban cores across the country adapt to remote work trends and more residents from converted office towers. The hotel topped out in early 2024. Its 110 rooms could welcome guests before the end of the year. We're excited to be able to develop that hotel here in Cincinnati, Patel said. And the Moxie will join Patel's other downtown Cincinnati hotel, the Holiday Inn and Suites at 7th and Broadway. Downtown Cincinnati's occupancy rates don't tell the full story of hospitality's comeback. Now, occupancy in 2019 was 74.2%, with an inventory of 2,928 rooms. That's according to data from CoStar, a global provider of real estate data, analytics, and news. In 2023, occupancy was 64.1%, but with 486 more rooms. In fact, demand for rooms in 2023 was 2.8% above 2019 levels. Patel is optimistic, in large part, due to the renovation of the Duke Energy Convention Center and the planned Convention Center Hotel, which could begin construction in the next 12 months. The former Millennium Hotel was demolished in 2022, but it has been years since the region had a headquarters hotel it was proud to tout as an option for conventions. Having a true headquarters hotel again is expected to draw conventions and meetings to Cincinnati in the future. It's kind of the missing piece when you're looking at the conventions district and over the Rhine to the banks, he said. Our city is pretty complete, except for that middle area. And it's all going to be revitalized and redone and redeveloped with some massive infrastructure components. Our best days are still ahead of us. Now let's take a look at education for a moment. We'll go up to the University of Cincinnati and their approval of $36 million for a massive student housing development. The University of Cincinnati will spend $36 million to fund site development for a series of new dorms that will effectively expand its campus south across Calhoun Street, a calculated move by the school amid expectations of significant growth. UC's Board of Trustees approved the funding at a meeting April the 23rd. It will allow Turner Construction to execute an early site development package and start site work, including excavation, installing site utilities, constructing a parking podium to support the housing, and ordering long lead systems and equipment. The so-called Block 1 and 2 development will sit on 2.1 acres at the northwest corner of East McMillan and Vine Streets in Clifton Heights. It is the last remaining vacant land in the neighborhood's business district, and it's currently owned by Clifton Heights Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, or CHCURC. The project will bring four new student dorms, consisting of 1,300 total beds, an increase of 100 beds from UC's previous descriptions in board documents and proposal request. And it's also expected to include 20,000 square feet of recreational space and police safety substation. The project is expected to cost around $300 million, which includes current $36 million allocation, $8.25 million the board approved last October to acquire the land, pending an agreement with CHCURC, or $15 million the board approved last August for design work. The figure is triple what UC originally forecast for the project in 2022, when it issued a non-inclusive cost projection of $100 million. The agreement with CHCURC is now finalized, according to the April 23rd board documents, the UC also must approve the purchase of land from the Ohio Controlling Board, which meets in May. The development site straddles Scioto Lane. Block 1 to the east will feature three buildings of traditional university housing with connected ground-level common space, a campus recreation fitness center, and 125 to 200 structured parking spaces, according to previous board documents. Block 2 to the west will feature one building with apartment-style housing. The board said April 23rd, the project will also include a police safety substation. A police center was among the request for the project sent to UC by the CUF Neighborhood Association in March. It also requested a transportation hub, anticipating the bus rapid transit line funded by Metro Moves. UC contemplated partnering with CHCURC on a joint venture, but ultimately sided with owning the land outright. The school will operate the site and all of its buildings as normal campus assets. The school previously said construction was expected to begin this month, April of 2024. Construction materials and a digger have been at the site for a number of weeks. Work is expected to be completed by the summer of 2027, a year later than originally planned. UC at an April 15th Ohio Controlling Board meeting requested approval to purchase the 0.89-acre parcel on the southeast corner of Martin Luther King Drive and Eden Avenue for $1.25 million. It's currently owned by UC Health. The parcel will be folded into the $125 million Bellevue Gardens development, though the board at its April 23rd meeting did not consider anything related to it. Construction is set to begin August of 2024. The board at the April 23rd meeting also approved $14 million to fund the final phase of renovations at Rivershell Hall. The Rivershell renovations are among the last in a series of dominoes that must fall, including the $190 million expansion of Old Chem, before Skanska, UC's selected general contractor, can begin to demolish Crossley Tower. The school has decided to replace the tower with a $240 million science and research building. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half of today's program. You're listening to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report here on Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, the division of ESINT, Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Thanks for sticking with us, or if you're just joining, you're listening to Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, the division of ESINT, Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein, and I'll continue with the second half of this week's edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report. We'll continue with our second article of the day, or I should say the week, regarding how things are going for downtown Cincinnati. The article is entitled "The New Downtown." As cities across the nation grapple with empty office buildings, Cincinnati shows refilling them can be done, but it's not easy. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, about 75% of Sleepy Bee Cafe's downtown patrons chowing down on breakfast sandwiches and pancakes were business people, either locals or those traveling from out of town. Today, it's 25%. But business diners have been replaced in large part by people visiting downtown for games, concerts, conventions, or other reasons, General Manager Nick Cotter said. It took until 2022 for the business environment to feel secure, but he estimates the downtown location's sales are still off about 15%. The landscape and the demographic of our clientele has shifted dramatically, Cotter said. Events have become such a huge driver of our business. Downtown has become increasingly a destination of choice. Sleepy Bee's changes is emblematic of the greater one occurring gradually downtown, a move away from using the skyscrapers that shape the Cincinnati skyline for workplaces to where people live and gather and entertain. Developers plan or are constructing 1,456 new apartments and 279 hotel rooms in former office buildings in the Central Business District. That's according to Business Courier research and data provided by commercial real estate firm CBRE. And more conversions are in the works on an unspecified number of additional apartment units. Other data compiled by consultant Michael Dinn shows the potential number of homes and buildings that could contain 50 units or more increasing by more than half if they all are built, which is no sure thing. It adds up to the biggest potential transformation of downtown since the 1970s, when the city decided to emphasize office buildings over residential. Without a strong downtown, the rest of the city may suffer, creating a downward spiral impacting the entire region, leaders believe. This is unlike any other time, said Bobby Bally, CEO of Developer Model Group. Why do you care if you're not downtown? There are a lot of large companies that are competing for talent all over the globe. We need places that attract young people where they want to live. 3CDC, restaurant, parking revenue see double digits. Landing first for retail, restaurant, and entertainment tenants is an under-the-radar part of the nonprofit Cincinnati Center City Development Corporation's mission to create a district around a reimagined Duke Energy Convention Center and a new headquarters hotel. To start, 3CDC will add a new restaurant tenant to the Foundry, just off Fountain Square, and another at the site of the shuttered 6th Fifth Avenue store, as well as a sports bar at the corner of 5th and Ray Streets and self-pour wine bar, something to whine about, on the first floor of the 4th and Race building. We're poised to have a very unique food and beverage entertainment district there, 3CDC CEO Steve Lieber said. You'll be able to come out of that convention center or convention center hotel, walk a block, and you're coming into a district that has a bunch of restaurant and entertainment options. They're mostly Cincinnati-based. That's not the case elsewhere. There is a market for these tenants, which 3CDC sees in the receipts from both its restaurant bar tenants in downtown. 2023 per square foot revenue is up 31% over 2019, and over the Rhine up 24%, and parking revenue for garages it owns or manages throughout the urban core up 11% per parking place. Even though the post-pandemic downtown may have fewer people per square foot in former office buildings during the daytime, Lieber believes the foot traffic downtown will grow. It will be a net increase, but it may be a different mix. More visitors, more residents, Lieber said. Five major downtown office buildings dip below 50% occupancy. Downtown Cincinnati's office market is not dead. Even though the overall vacancy rate downtown is 25.2%, high-end office space is thriving and keeping it vital for a new, vibrant downtown. Owners that have not kept their buildings up to date or lavished their properties with amenities in what the industry leaders call the flight to quality may be in trouble, particularly if landlords are not bringing in enough revenue for them to make debt payments. Cincinnati's diverse economy is helping keep the office market afloat. Procter & Gamble, Kroger, Fifth Third Bank, and Western & Southern Financial Group all have workers back in their corporate headquarters, some as many as 4 or 5 days per week. That's a big deal, Malley said. It's not just Cincinnati's corporate giants, either. Great American Insurance, Keating, Muthing & Kleecap, Voorhees, Taft, Stettinius & Hollister, Chemed, EW Scripps, First Group, Staffmark, and Mass Mutual all have new lease deals totaling 914,000 square feet that have been signed in approximately the last year, although some have reduced their overall footprint. When you talk to people that are doing business in other Midwestern cities, they are shocked at how well Cincinnati is doing, said Travis Likes, first vice president with CBRE Cincinnati's office. The general feel and vibe of downtown feels like 2019. But not everything is hunky-dory. The office market in downtown Cincinnati is worrisome, said Adam Mayerson, chief operating officer of the Mayerson Company, which owns the Scripps Center, one of downtown's largest office towers. The building is 85% occupied, according to CBRE. Mayerson believes it will be back to its typical 91% occupancy rate by the end of the year. The Courier's research found 5 major office buildings not currently slated for conversion with occupancy under 50%. Mayerson acknowledges that law firms, whose business requires veteran lawyers to teach new attorneys in the office, are pulling a lot of weight. The Mayersons once worried about 40% of the building being leased by law firms. After the pandemic, they were relieved. In industries like law or medicine, you can't learn unless you're on the job, Mayerson said. Over the past decade, 4 Class B buildings, those that are generally older, have fewer amenities and a less desirable location, totaling 961,000 square feet, have been converted to residential. That's according to Cushman & Wakefield data. Developers have crews converting another 530,000 square feet right now. That figure does not include 275,000 square feet that is being converted at the former Macy's building by New York developer Anoop Day, and almost 700,000 square feet at the Carew Tower, also controlled by Day, who declined to comment about his projects. Most of the real estate sources the Courier interviewed believe they will continue to be Class B offices. Regardless of the ongoing flight to quality, some tenants still always see value options, said Jordan Widener, executive managing director at Cushman & Wakefield, citing the Huntington Center at 525 Vine Street. It's a good, solid building. Always be positioned as a less expensive than your Class A asset. Malley isn't so sure. I would say there won't be B. I think there's going to be A plus and C, Malley said. When you have Class B and C office that's just sort of deteriorates, it's like the frog cooking in the pot. It doesn't know it's dying. More may be on the way, including 312 Plum Street. Owner Rubenstein Partners, which also owns the former Enquire building at 312 Elm Street, has a letter of intent to sell the building to an unnamed buyer. 3 or 4 buildings downtown are having difficulty with their lenders and cannot do a market rate deal, like said. In such situations, lenders and owners can renegotiate. The owner can recapitalize or the lender eventually will end up with the building. They're in this gray area where the owner doesn't know what's going to happen. They're limited on the deal terms they can provide. Like said, you're going to have more announcements in the next 12 months of buildings that will be converted to apartments, anywhere between 30 to 60% occupied. And those tenants have got to find a new home. Hurdles remain with high construction costs and rising rents. That's only one of the problems an office-to-residential conversion faces, Bally said, and it's a big one. Developers can't afford to pay people to leave their leases. The Models Mercantile project, which includes the library building and the adjacent Mercantile Center, the previous owner basically emptied the building of tenants. It's just not that it's expensive, Bally said. You have one tenant in the middle of the building, they can stop the whole thing. Other issues include reluctant banks, higher construction costs, and local rents that, while rising, still don't make a project sufficiently profitable for the risk involved. Now, to get money for Model's next downtown projects, which, when they are announced, will bring 172 units at several historic properties, its team has sought non-traditional, community-driven lenders, including credit unions and non-profit national lending institutions. These people are giving folks like us a loan because I have a history with them, and I'm doing projects that fit their mission, Mally said. When it comes to office building conversions, Cincinnati got a head start, having been able at it for nearly a decade. 63% of the existing major downtown apartment projects of 50 units or more were completed in the last decade, according to DIN. While the city's conversion activity compares favorably with other markets, outpacing every city in the Midwest, according to CBRE data, the city and its development community have a ton of work to do. Many of the conversion projects under construction now were at least envisioned, if not financed and approved, before the pandemic. Most building rehabilitations in the urban core end up needing some kind of city assistance to be sufficiently profitable for developers to take them on. Cincinnati's relatively low rents mean the city kicks in to make the balance sheet work through property tax abatements and/or through tax increment financing. The city can tap into funds set aside in its various downtown TIF districts or create a project-centered TIF that diverts all or a portion of the money the developer would pay in property taxes back to the project. Its first preference is to save the cash the city has for development for the projects that need it the most, said Dan Bower, the city's Deputy Director of Community and Economic Development. We're looking at any tool that is available that's not direct cash from the city to be able to do these conversions, Bower said. Doing so saves money for new construction downtown, or the higher cost of renovations being done on smaller buildings. The Mercantile conversion project did not require money directly from the city, nor have the Macy's or Carew Tower projects, which the city considers a boon because of their size, importance, and difficulty. It did need to provide cash to the $90 million Central Trust Tower project, converting that iconic building on the city's skyline to nearly 300 residential units with resort-style amenities. Overall, the city believes it's in a good position compared with other mid-sized Midwestern cities. We feel pretty good versus our peers, Bower said. While acknowledging there is much to do, it would make everyone on City Council feel better if we had fewer surface parking lots. No one seems to worry about a future oversaturation of residential, which typically has been 95% full. The city once required a market study for underwriting such projects, but it does not do so currently, Bauer said. It might do so if the developer wants aid on a new residential tower. There is a dynamic stream of market turnover with no one in sight, according to Ditt. Being downtown is important, especially for the younger mobile professional. Half of our people are coming in from outside of the metro looking for a cool place to live, Ditt said. We're playing catch-up. We still haven't filled the pool up. Malley, however, is skeptical about the pace of change. The city's goal should be to have 20,000 new downtown units in the next 15 years, he said, the kind of residential growth that would provide built-in demand for pancakes and avocado toast at Sleepy Bee and other downtown restaurants. That would be a healthy city. But if it takes us 3 or 4 years to get those 2,000 units online, we're losing, and we are losing twice. Once compared to other cities that aren't going to be okay with that, and we're losing compared to the activity downtown that was occurring before COVID. That should be a 5-alarm fire. Next up today, let's talk a little sports, specifically the Cincinnati Bengals and Hamilton County. Why the county rejected the Bengals' $350 million lease extension proposal. Hamilton County last summer declined a proposal by the Cincinnati Bengals to sign a 5-year lease extension for $350 million in upgrades, with $300 million coming from taxpayers and $50 million coming from the team, according to public records. The overture came in an August 8, 2023 email from Bengals Vice President Troy Blackburn to Hamilton County Administrator Jeff Valuto. The approach would solve the necessary short-term requirements and obligations, while at the same time giving the parties another 8 seasons to forge longer-term solutions, Blackburn said. Valuto told the Business Courier that the county declined that deal, in part because it was far too much money for too short of a lease term. The county would have to take on debt that would not be repaid until well after the extended lease expired. The current lease expires in 2026, although the team has the option to extend it 5 times by a period of 2 years, with notice on the first extension due in 2025. Debt service on both Paycor Stadium and Great American Ballpark, which the county also owns, will not be paid off until 2032. The Board of Commissioners has been very clear what it wants. It wants the team here for decades. It wants the stadium transformed to be a community asset to be used for decades, Aluto said, adding that the county appreciates the offer because it shows the Bengals want to remain in Cincinnati. If we did that, then 5 years from now, we're going to be right back where we are today, only with less resources to secure the team long term. If I'm a taxpayer, I'm going to have a problem with that, Aluto added. Aaron Herzig, a Taft, Stettinius & Hollister partner representing the Bengals, said the offer speaks for itself. It was about getting investment into the building this year and next, all of which is called for under the facilities condition assessment that we received a few years ago, Herzig said. It's not inconsistent with the economics or the structure that you see in other markets doing renovations. Last December, after the August exchange, the county agreed to begin $39 million in upgrades and fixes to Paycor Stadium. Those expenses are part of a $494 million facilities assessment upgrade plan commissioners received April of 2022. Now underway is a broader master plan study. It will recommend more high-level improvements that would bring Paycor Stadium up to the standards of other newer National Football League stadiums, a proposal that is expected to add to the overall cost, although it could overlap some. The master plan is due by June, but a year ago, a presentation floated the cost of a broad renovation being between $600 and $850 million. Blackburn's letter frames the Bengals' proposal as showing what other markets pay for a 10-year extension and compares it to what the Baltimore Ravens agreed to with the state of Maryland in exchange for $600 million in improvements to M&T Bank Stadium. The 2023 Ravens deal keeps the team in Baltimore through at least 2037. Moreover, the Ravens must pay all operations and maintenance costs for the stadium. Currently, Hamilton County pays for those expenses at Paycor, which total about $8 million per year, according to the county. Asked about the aspect of the Ravens' lease extension, Herzig noted that the Bengals' proposal was for a shorter-term extension and that the team had contributed to upgrades. In 2022 and 23, the team kicked in $32 million for items including a new indoor practice facility, upgrades to concession stands, LED video ribbon boards, improvements to the pro shop, suite upgrades, lounge updates, a VIP area at the field level, and improvements to the team's training spaces. Some of those improvements are not included in the facility's condition assessment. The team has been committed to making its own investment, Herzig said. The team has put its money where its mouth is. A sweetheart lease. County commissioners have concerns over lease terms. Beyond aligning any new debt service with the lease extension terms, County Commissioners Alicia Reese, Stephanie Sumaro-Gomez, and Denise Driehaus have expressed concerns about the terms of the lease itself. Rarely do the three Democrats speak about the lease without noting that their Republican predecessors negotiated it and or making pejorative comments about it. On April 23rd, for example, Dumas called it unrealistic, maybe a little crazy. The Bengals continue to reject the widely held notion that they have a sweetheart lease. The idea that our lease was worse than others is inaccurate, Herzig said. But the county says it wants the lease terms to be different. We don't know what they're looking for. In a market the size of Cincinnati, an NFL lease has to help drive revenue to the team. The markets we compete with are growing faster than we are growing. Forbes estimated that the Bengals had $104 billion in operating income, that's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, on $498 million in revenue in 2022. The average NFL team's revenue was $581 million, while the average operating income was $126 million. The Bengals ranked 31st in revenue, tied for 15th in operating income among the 32 NFL franchises, according to Forbes' NFL valuations list. Each NFL team got $249 million in revenue alone from the NFL television deal in 2022. Baltimore's metropolitan population is 2.8 million people, compared with Cincinnati's 2.25 million. Between 2000 and 2023, Baltimore's population grew 10.8%, according to Census Bureau. Between 2000 and 2023, Cincinnati's grew 12.8%. Asked whether there are specific terms the commissioners want changed in a new lease, Ludo said it's too early to say, but would not negotiate through the media. All three commissioners also have said they want a more balanced capital stack. when the current stadium was constructed for $455 billion, not including interest. Appleton County paid $373 million, the Ohio Cultural Facilities Commission contributed $50 million, and the team paid $32 million. The board wants to sit down and structure a market lease, Aluto said. The board is very attuned to the current market and what's going on at other stadiums, both new builds and renovations. They want to be fair about this, but they want the funding model. We have to be consistent with the market. The financing for the existing stadium included the state and the team, Herzog noted. The vast majority of the funding will have to come from the sales tax. That's what the voters approved for. That's the reality of this NFL market, Herzog said. But in their public comments, commissioners have indicated they don't want Hamilton County taxpayers footing more than 80% of the construction costs as they did in the 1990s. Reese frequently says that, including the operating and maintenance costs the county has incurred over the past quarter century, local taxpayers' share of the cost are 94%, while they get none of the profits. On April 23rd, Reese said she expects the NFL to kick in at least $100 million for a long-term overhaul of the stadium. Herzig said, financing for new stadiums and renovations are an apples-to-orange comparison, but also said the team would seek to work with the NFL on programs that it has now that it didn't have then. The people talk about Buffalo and Nashville. Those are new stadiums. New stadiums see very different economics, Herzig said. We're lucky here. We have a funding source in place. The community is taking care of its stadium such that we don't need a new one. Well, that brings me to the end of this week's program. You've been listening to the Greater Cincinnati Business Report here on Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, the division of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired. I'm Stephen J. Lowenstein, and on behalf of all of us here at Radio Reading Services, thanks for listening. And join me next week at this very same time for another fun and exciting fact-filled edition of the Greater Cincinnati Business Report.